Welcome to Marketing Musicology with your host, Dr. David Allen.
So welcome to Marketing Musicology, Dave Allen. Today we're talking to Julian Treasure. Too long of a resume to go over, but a big fan of his. Obviously, big fan of his book, Sound Business, and all that he speaks for. Julian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David. Good to be here.
So, you know, I laugh when I read yet another article that audio is back and audio is having a resurgence and all that kind of stuff. From being in, you know, from being in the radio industry for almost 20 years and now doing what I do now and trying to, you know, to inspire the next generation of audio lovers. I don't think audio ever went away. I guess it just is getting more attention now. You want to speak to where you think audio is in 2019?
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting time right now because of the implications of digital, really. Digital's been with us for a while, but now we're seeing digital starting to link up with a lot of intelligent technologies and some new applications. So smart speakers, for example, which I gather have been the number one Christmas present yet again in America and which are becoming enormously prevalent. People are going to start transitioning from using their fingers and their eyes to using their mouth and their ears in interfacing with technology. And I think that's a huge shift. So I think it is true to say we're about to enter an audio revolution in that way, where we'll be speaking to things to command them instead of having to sit and type and look. It's much more convenient. You can do other things while you're listening and speaking, but it's much more difficult to do that, as we see with constant traffic accidents. Another one just the other day in London, with what are called iPod zombies or phone zombies, pedestrians. It's a dangerous thing to go around not paying attention to what's around you, but we can speak and listen very easily. And I think in our homes, in our work, in our cars, these interfaces are going to become more and more prevalent, more and more common. We will get much more used to it. And I don't think it's that far off, maybe 10 years at the most, the way that the technology is going, before we get to the level of a kind of Iron Man Jarvis personal assistant that we can talk to, who will deal with stuff, and then we'll be going, what apps? Why did I ever have to have 50 apps on my phone and sign into every one of them every time and so forth? Because you'll just make a request, you'll have an intermediary, and that intermediary will speak to, in inverted commas, the other intelligences out there. Now, that raises huge questions, of course, for the advertising industry. There'll be a new gatekeeper, and our interest and attention will become the absolutely golden commodity that they're all going to be after, and it'll be harder for them to get to us. So there are a lot of implications there for brands in terms of how they're going to market and how they're going to relate to interesting and engaging content, for example, which is what most of us are after most of the time, how they'll wrap that around their core offering and their communications instead of simply selling to us. They'll have to engage us and interest us. So there's a lot that I think is going to happen in the next 10 years centered around audio. And it's no, it's absolutely no coincidence that radio is booming all over the world despite media fragmentation. Many people thought radio would die. It's doing better than ever, pretty much everywhere. And at the same time, we have the fastest growing form of marketing in the world, as far as I can see at the moment, especially in America, which is podcasting. So audio is booming, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I think if you look at the bigger picture, we're in an incredibly exciting moment, really, for anybody who's involved in the audio industry.
That, great stuff. There's so many things. Smart speaker, I'm delivering a paper at Columbia University in the fall called Smart Branding. The Journal of Consumer Research is having a pre-conference. That's a big journal for marketing people. And so I'm doing a conference there about, some brands are starting to figure it out. I don't know if anybody has totally figured it out. I think the ones that have figured out that it's not just about an audio logo, I like what people are saying, MasterCard, I like what they had to say with that, how they were going to build that out. But where do you think, what brands do you like their audio strategy when it comes to smart speakers that I should be thinking about and looking at?
No, I think you're right, David. I don't think anybody's there yet. This is such a new toy. Are we going to get people trying to change Alexa's voice or whatever into some branded voice? What would they offer us for that? Because, we don't necessarily want to be talked to by McDonald's the whole time or whatever it might be. So I think there are many, many challenges there, and it's going to be very much about value. That will be the heart of it. If the marketer can produce value, and to me, that's going to be about content very largely and access to content, then I think they will gain access to us. I think brands will become the stars of the virtual universe, if you like, with a lot of gravity attracting content around them, appropriate content, really well curated content. And we're seeing this happen with podcasting already. What we're seeing, I think, and what we've seen over the past 10 years, well, how long is it since I wrote my book, Sound Business? 12 years, I think, and things have changed a great deal. I mean, at that time, the advertising industry was pretty oblivious to the power of sound for brands, apart from the use of music and voiceovers in advertising. And that has changed a great deal. We now are in a very competitive industry. My company, The Sound Agency, works worldwide. We're members of a thing called the Audio Branding Society, which is a German-based organization that's acting kind of like a trade association. And there are hundreds of members all over the world. There's audio branding happening in Brazil, in Africa, in Russia, in India, all over the place. Brands are starting to realize sound is powerful. And we are very excited that the industry is growing and has grown through multiple recessive years. Marketing, it's been a strongly growing industry, and it is now becoming de rigueur for brands to consider the question: how does our brand sound? And put it alongside, how do we look? Which used to be the only thing they would ever consider. And I think fragrance marketing, alongside, is growing too. So the whole sensory marketing is booming, and that's not surprising. We experience the world in five senses, not just one. So we are working with brands in lots of different ways, although I have to say the Sound Agency works largely in physical spaces. That has become, over the years, that's become our specialization, really. So less oriented around music, and lots of audio branding agencies are effectively composers who've moved a bit up the food chain and who now produce, where they once did jingles or advertising music, they now do sonic logos and brand music and brand sound and so forth. Well, we do that stuff, but most of what we do is implementing it in physical spaces, branded spaces, which might be showrooms, offices, shopping malls, shops, airports, all sorts of spaces like that. We're very excited about that because I still think, as I said in the book, way back, I still think the world is a pretty noisy place. Most of the sound around us is like the exhaust gas of the economy. It's not planned. It's just stuff that's coming out because of the way people are behaving. And brands are responsible for a very great deal of that, whether it be transport noise, construction noise, the bad acoustics of a shopping mall. These things are still assailing us. So there's a lot of work to do in making the world sound better, which is my particular passion in life, to have people listen more consciously and create environments which are healthier, more effective, and create happier people. And I think brands have got a big role to play in that. So again, it comes back to value. And if you create beautiful environments which are lovely to be in, people will want to be in them. And it would obviously be stupid to have a shop with a terrible smell It's amazing how many stores still have terrible sound.
That's atmospheric has become such a large part. I think in big comment, then little comment. So I think that the United States, gross generalization here, but the United States will probably not do as well with all of this as everywhere else, because a lot of retailers and brands that are United States based look at this situation as too commercialized, too surface kind of, you know, quick solution, as opposed to a lot of other places, again, gross generalization, that look at this more intrinsic and more part of a DNA and more, you know, a long-term process and that kind of stuff. So that's my knock against the United States as opposed to anywhere else. But that, you know, in this kind of situation, and I think that because retail has been so challenged, again, the United States, things like atmospherics, you know, which sound is a big part of, obviously, have to a certain extent gone to the wayside. Also, you know, they're more likely to put a food around a mall than they are to go inside the mall and try to create a better mall experience. Would you agree?
Yes, I think to a degree that's true. There are some pretty exceptional malls in the US, but there are still an awful lot of boxes of shops. And I don't know exactly what's happening over there, but I can tell you in the UK, the mall owners, the investors are having a very, very rough ride at the moment. There are a huge number of flagship stores, which are anchor stores for a lot of malls, going bust. And that's going to leave them with enormous dead areas in these places. So I think they're starting to realize that unless they create experience, there's got to be a reason for going to a place. And it's not just to do shopping anymore. So you have to create experience in all five senses. You have to create a wow factor. You have to create something engaging, something social, something interesting. And again, you know, sound can do a lot of that. We've done some pretty innovative installations. So you can look at foreground sound as well as background sound, sound installations, things which are fun to play with, interactive sound and so forth. It can play a pretty big role in a more than atmospheric way in creating something that's entertaining and exciting to be in. Think more, you know, cinema than shopping mall. And I think there's a huge potential, as long as we're not bombarding people with unwanted noise. And that is a pretty critical element. You know, one person's noise is another person's music. And that is, to me, the biggest challenge, particularly, you know, with what you're talking about, the kind of mindless knee-jerk reaction to deploying sound, that normally results in what I call mindless music, which is something we've removed an awful lot from spaces where somebody's just done a contract with Mood Media or somebody. There's not a lot of thought gone into it, and you end up with the same anodyne, bland music that's playing next door. And to be honest, annoying quite a lot of people, because unless, as I think your research has shown, unless you're very, very careful to consider the word appropriate in your music choices. Is it appropriate for the brand? Is it appropriate for the demographics and the age group of the people in this space? Is it appropriate for what they're doing? And we would add the space as well. Listen to the acoustics, the sound system. I mean, there's no point trying to play, you know, deep house music through $5 loudspeakers, which were designed for life safety announcements. That kind of thing we come across an awful lot. So the word appropriate is one that we use a great deal. It's very important. And that's where we've come to designing generative soundscapes and installing those in a lot of places instead of music playlists. Music is enormously powerful, but it is largely designed to be listened to. And it does suffer when it's turned into some sort of veneer in the background, when a lot of people just find it irritating. So I think we need to be careful with the sound we're deploying, whether it's, you know, I'm interested also by the MasterCard Sonic logo they've just announced. It's interesting. We'll see how they roll it out. brands can become obsessive with these kind of things. And if you hear a Sonic logo too much, then it can become an object of derision. That happened to a degree to Nokia with Nokia Tune, where, you know, it almost at its peak when I worked out that was being played, was it 8 billion times a day or some ridiculous number of times a day? I mean, it was once every 20,000 times a second it was being played in the world. I worked that out with Nokia when we were working for them. But, of course, it became a watchword for not being smart enough to change your own ringtone, you know. What you haven't realized you can do something with that phone. So it kind of became associated with negative values in many ways. Although they changed that later on, they had a great idea. They created a competition for India and for China in both those countries, and they engaged local composers. There was a prize for creating a locally flavored version of Nokia Tune, which happened, and they installed it on the handsets for those markets, and the composers won a prize. And it was a very interesting first pass, really, at democratizing a brand. You know, they released it out, they crowdsourced it effectively, and there aren't many brands that are brave enough to do that kind of thing. Sadly, they then went down the tubes and ceased to exist to all intents and purposes. But I think that was a very smart way of using sound and making it locally appropriate. Again, that word.
Yeah, so I'm always telling people that audio is a strategy, not a tactic, and that I also worry that that when things like this, well, it's good for you because you do it well, and by comparison, you know, you succeed where others fail. But I worry about, as a whole, audio branding when there are large examples of failure, whether that hurts the initiative, the movement, and that, you know, people go on to something else. I guess that's not so bad, because then the good people, the people that do it well, that's sort of like podcasting. There's so many bad podcasts out there that eventually they'll just fall off and the good ones will survive and thrive. So
I think that's true, David. I mean, I remember, I come from a background in magazine publishing, and I remember when Quark Express and PageMaker, as they were, it came out in the mid to late 80s. There was a sea of crap that suddenly emerged as everybody and his dog decided that they could design magazines and publications. Wow, we can use 20 fonts. Let's do that. You know, and in just the same way, I think we've seen that with the democratization of music production to a degree. I mean, there's now more music produced in a day than you or I could listen to probably in 5 years. Gone are the days when I was growing up where you could read a music newspaper, buy a couple of albums and be absolutely on the money and know what was going on. You know, that's not the case now. There was a lot of rubbish music made when people realized they could do it all on a laptop in their bedroom. Nevertheless, and there probably still is, nevertheless, the good stuff does tend to rise to the top and get attention. And that is true, I think, of branding as well. So there are some people who've done pretty bad jobs with branded audio. There have been some very interesting and probably inappropriate relationships, for example, in the band brand space over the years, which is a space I know you know very well. You know, I think back to Microsoft paying the Rolling Stones, how much was it for Start Me Up, and so forth. Well, you know, we live and learn from these things. I think there's still a lot of mileage in the band brand space, probably more the way brands sponsoring tours and bands. And you know, we have to be a bit careful there, because there's a degree of cynicism from purist fans when their favorite band starts to tell them to buy something. However, I think that's an interesting space. The space of podcasting, earcons, we call them, another form of audio branding, which I think is very interesting, the oralization of the web in a sensitive and appropriate way. I'm not talking about imposing sound on people every time they go to a website, but I am talking about offering them, you know, pleasing experiences and maybe signposting or fun interactions. all of which, as you rightly say, needs to be strategic. To us, a sonic logo is usually the DNA, it's usually the heart of a brand. Working off brand sound guidelines, which really have to be created right at the beginning. And then out of that, you can flow musical interpretations like music on hold or ringtones or things like that, earcons, as I've said, soundscapes. The soundscapes we deploy tend to have the sonic logo as a very subtle imprint. It's the DNA, but it doesn't bother you every 32 seconds or something. We just did a wonderful job, actually, the first time I think anybody's ever done this, for a major conference. It was the European Society of Cardiologists, which doesn't sound that big, but they have an annual congress which is visited by, wait for it, 35,000 cardiologists. So it's a huge event. It took place in Munich, and they were conscious that, you know, conferences and exhibitions tend to sound pretty bad. So this was a perfect opportunity for us to review the whole thing, which we did. We created a lovely sonic logo based, of course, on a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And it then informed, we had soundscapes for people when they were, you know, in boring or, you know, time-consuming places like registration halls and so forth. We had soundscapes for people in exhibition areas, which were designed specifically not to compete with exhibition mush and sound and noise. We had walk-on music for people as the speakers came onto the stages of their big auditoriums. We had a call to action music, 3 minutes long, which started off slow and got louder and more strident, and became a kind of Pavlovian reaction for people where they heard it played, oh, time to be in the hall. We had soundscapes as people left at the end, or music as people left at the end. It was a really wonderful kind of multi-stranded sound design for a huge event, which only lasted 5 days. But it was enormously impactful, and there was a lot of positive comment back. So I think, you know, the sky's the limit for the industry in terms of intelligent use of sound. And we always use the word sound, not music. You know, a lot of people think audio branding is just music. Music is one kind of sound, it's a very powerful kind of sound, but it is not the default go-to sound in most situations, and we need to be very careful with that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still do a lot of counseling for people like me that left radio, and my big thing with radio is that they need to stop calling it radio, that radio is only one part of what they do. They need to think of it in terms of audio. And then you need to think of it in terms of audio on different platforms in different way. And that they start to glass over a little bit when I get to that point. But and I don't know that if I was still there, I wouldn't still be saying radio. But because, you know, you got to hold on to what you got to hold on to.
It's a tough one. It is a tough one, especially when you've got, you know, Spotify and everybody else talking, using the word radio, right, to mean algorithmically programmed streams of what I unkindly call machine music, where you put in James Brown at the beginning, come back in an hour, and they're playing something very, very different. So those things, you know, Pandora notwithstanding, and the work that's going into understanding and decoding music, which I don't think will ever succeed because music is ineffable. However, they may get better, but they're still not going to be as good. It's a little bit like our relationship with the web. You know, we tend to, I always react against the word surfing. We don't go around surfing the web so much as looking for validation or searching for specific things which are all linked. And it's the same when you do that algorithmic music. Are you discovering stuff that you are really going to be surprised and delighted by? There's a role for radio. I've been talking about the audio specialists who are good at creating high-value content, so not machine music. And the role, I think, is that of trusted guide. There's such a tidal wave of content coming at us all the time. We are starting to suffer, 24 hours a day from FOMO, from fear of missing out. Oh my God, I might have missed the greatest album ever. Somebody might have tagged me or tweeted about me, and this kind of incessant having to check in. And it is wonderful, isn't it? If you've got somebody you can trust to deliver to you the stuff that you really are going to be interested in, which may surprise you from time to time and will delight you or disgust you from time to time, but it's always going to be interesting. That is the role for radio, and that'll never be replaced by algorithmic streams of music. And as long as they understand that, that it's all about relationship, it's about character, personality, and specialization, I think they have a huge future. Because, you know, when 20 years ago, there would be a death metal station in Bergen, Norway, playing to 200 people. Well, now that same death metal station in Bergen, Norway, is probably playing to 200,000 people because it's suddenly available globally. And that is an amazing opportunity for radio to get more and more fine-grained and brilliant at being a trusted guide to things people love.
Yeah, I want to be cognizant of your time because I could talk to you for hours about this. Is there anything that, you know, you gave me what you're super excited about at the beginning. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you're thinking about looking towards, you know, predictions for the next 10 years, those kind of things before I let you go?
Yes. Well, we're pushing the envelope at the Sound Agency in this exploration of sound for spaces, really. So we have been developing our generative sound system. We call it the Ambifier. And so we've now got a multiprocessor system, which will do 8 different soundscapes at the same time. Plus, it'll duck everything that could be playlists as well. So 8 different sound sources and could be music playlists. It'll duck them all with messages, which we're deploying in the Middle East right now with 5 call to prayers a day, which is a very interesting solution. It's a challenge in the Middle East to do audio because you have to do call to prayer 5 times a day, the right call to prayer at the right time, which depends on the sun up in a particular location and so forth. So that's a very exciting thing that we're starting to look at intelligent ways of deploying locally sensitive content like that. Plus, we've just launched a service called Mood Sonic, which is deploying generative technology in offices. I've been talking for quite a time on the TED stage and elsewhere about the terrible sound in open plan offices and how it's blighting people's health and productivity. And we are now doing something about that to take on, slightly a snake oil industry, the sound masking industry, which has been installing kind of filtered pink noise or brown noise or whatever it is they've been using, filtered noise in spaces to mask other people's conversation, which is the most distracting sound of all. But that noise is not good for people. There's research now showing that it's over time, it does increase stress and fatigue and so forth. Whereas if you start to use nature-based sound, biophilic sound, you can achieve similar results and create an atmosphere which is, you know, actually beautiful for people to work in, because, you know, wind, water, and birds have been around on this planet a lot longer than we have, and they're sounds that I'm very interested in the research. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's research coming out now which is showing how healthy birdsong, for example, is, and how healthy certain kinds of running water are for people in terms of reducing stress, reducing anxiety, reducing fatigue, and creating positive brain chemical reactions. So that's what we're doing with Mood Sonic. We're really excited to be launching that into the office space, which we've never been into before, to create a sound which enhances well-being and also enhances effectiveness and productivity. So that's, you know, I think there's, as I said at the beginning of our conversation, David, I think the world of audio is at a very exciting point. I think there are many things we can do if we start designing with our ears and thinking about our environments, whether that's at home, in the office, in transport, in urban areas, as we move about, in retail. Let's start being more intelligent about how we deploy sound and how we measure it. You know, it's great the work that guys like you are doing to validate or disprove some of the urban fairy tales about, you know, playing jolly pop music in every possible location, which drives me nuts and I'm sure drives a lot of people nuts. So, you know, I'm very excited. I think more research needed, much more, and more possibilities for lots of environments. The next one after offices for us, I think healthcare, where again, I've given talks about that and how appalling the sound is in hospitals and healthcare facilities. So there's a lot of work in front of us, anybody involved in intelligent audio, and it's an exciting time.
So we've been talking to Julian Treasure. Thank you for being on Marketing Music College.
My great pleasure, David. Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to Marketing Musicology with Dr. David Allen.